This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 4th at 10:40 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we'll finally identify all those, quote, outside agitators who politicians in every city have been blaming for demonstrations.
Where are they from? Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd Snollygosters who are afraid to say that some people in their own city act like idiots. I mean, alleged idiots. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. Coming up in the podcast, a reminder that we are still in the throes of a global pandemic. But first.
This is the Frank County Sheriff's Office. Clear the area.
It has been a week of protests in downtown Columbus. Hundreds of demonstrators have marched up and down High Street from the State House to Ohio State, denouncing the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police and demanding changes in how police treat people of color.
No one's being held accountable for anything. We need people to be held accountable for the things that they do. So if you're the police or you're the judge or anyone else, you have to be held accountable just like the rest of the citizens have to be accountable.
At first, the protests were ugly. Storefront windows broken, looting, demonstrators throwing rocks and water bottles at police, police responding with force, tear gas, pepper spray, wooden bullets. There were several videos of police officers spraying protesters who appeared to be doing nothing wrong.
Public officials have tried to simultaneously maintain order and sympathize with the protesters.
I'm activating our National Guard to help drive out hate and violence. And to help instill order. This is about the safety of our communities, our neighbors, our families, our friends.
I accept full responsibility for the engagement and the tactics used by the Division of Police on Saturday. They did not meet mine or the community's expectations. I had a very direct conversation with the chief on Sunday morning, and I think you and many others that have been down there have seen a very, very different approach.
That's Governor Mike DeWine and Columbus Mayor Andrew Ginther. The protests occurred in every Ohio city, the big ones, Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, but also in rural and in suburban communities. Steve Brown, you've been coordinating our coverage.
I have been.
Much of the week, it's been the nonstop. It's
exhausting.
Been incredible.
Yeah, it's been exhausting. It's been fascinating. Saddening, heartening, all of the above to cover. There have been portrayals of violence. There have been most of these protests have been peaceful. The overwhelming majority of people participating have been peaceful. They've been singing beautiful songs. They've been asking for equality. They've been hearkening back images of Martin Luther King Jr. There have been some ugly elements, as we've laid out here. Mm-hmm. There have been stores in Columbus and other U.S. cities, other Ohio cities that have been looted. We've tried to give a lot of fair coverage to this. It's been an exhausting week. The killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis happened on Memorial Day, which as of this Thursday was, 10 days ago, 11 days ago?
Yeah.
And then come Thursday afternoon, we got word that there was a protest or two protests scheduled here in Columbus. And we did not staff them that night. Looking back, we probably should have. But sometimes with these protests, you don't know how big they're going to be, right? Yeah. We have a staff of just three reporters. And then so we were playing catch up the next day. And then come Friday, things really popped off with damages, arrests. There were, over the past week or so at this point, there have been upwards of 100 arrests here in Columbus. It's been a really, as I said, there have been moments of beauty in all of this. There have been moments of great sadness. It's been an interesting story to cover, that is for sure.
Yeah, I think it's not hard to do when you look at that videotape of what happened in Minneapolis, but
right.
I think leaders were pretty unanimous in their strong condemnation of what happened to George Floyd.
There's, now they are. They were not initially. They were
I was surprised by even – there were some who were, let's wait. Usually what you get is let's wait for the facts to come out. Let's get the whole story. Mm-hmm. But there was a little of that. But I think for the most part, Republican, Democrat, even a lot of police officers were saying, nope, this was crossed the line. And we know this was wrong. And – but on the other hand, they were also condemning you know, the looting and the vandalism as they should. I mean, that just really, you know, it doesn't help. And in fact, what it does is, instead of having, you know, the images on TV is what drives the narrative here. Instead of having the two images of the terrible videotape of what happened to George Floyd and then protests around the country, like the Women's March soon after Donald Trump got elected, those protests, those two images together, that would have been the image. But instead, they were all overshadowed by broken windows, tear gas, and fights with police. And that's what became the driving narrative here. And it's overshadowed, to some degree, the outrage and the civil unrest and the complaints of people of color and other people in this city and others.
Yeah, the media has, justifiably, I would say in some cases, taken some criticism for the way this story has been covered. It's a very difficult story to cover when you have a business owner whose shop has been destroyed and all the goods in their business have been looted. That's newsworthy. That's something we should cover, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's something that a business owner wants us to cover. But at the same time, you struggle with saying how the other 97% of people at this protest marched peacefully. They did not throw water bottles at police. They did not throw bricks at anyone else. There was no violence among the overwhelming majority of people in these protests.
I think overall, I mean, we're in the media, so it's hard to criticize or praise ourselves without the obvious conflict of interest. But overall, I think folks have done a pretty good job. I mean, I think
as good as you can. I admit it will always be an impossible story to cover perfectly.
I think we have been very careful to say that most of the protests have been peaceful. Most of the police interaction with protesters has been reasonable, but we've also pointed out when someone takes a skateboard and busts up a store window or a brick and busts up a store window or sets a car on fire, and we have been quick to point out when a police officer just seemingly indiscriminately blasts somebody with pepper spray and that person's just walking down the street. We have to cover it all, and it's hard to do.
Yeah, it really is an impossible story to cover. As we mentioned in the tease, the opening of the show, we've seen a lot of leaders, including our own mayor here in Columbus, Andrew Ginther, blame, quote, outside agitators, which is a problematic term for a lot of people. But also, it's just not really true. It doesn't seem to be true at this point.
There's no evidence. There's very, very little evidence that people are being bussed in, that there's this organized cabal of protesters from the right or the left coming in and causing the vandalism to stores. Just think about it. And I asked Shannon Harden this when I was filling in for Ann Fisher this week on our talk show. If every city is blaming outside agitators.
I'm laughing at the idea of trading.
Where are they coming from?
Are they trading protesters?
Are we trading our agitators with Indianapolis's, with an agitator to be named later? It doesn't make any sense. If every city is blaming outside agitators, where are they coming from? Are they just vaporizing or coming out of the ether? And let's face it, the results are, you mentioned 99 arrests.
In Columbus, between Friday and Tuesday, there were 89 arrests. 84 were people who live in the Columbus area, in central Ohio.
And Cleveland saw the same exact thing
right.
in their arrest records.
Right. And in Columbus, nearly every single person who was charged with a very serious crime, like rioting, aggravating rioting, or breaking and entering, was from the city of Columbus. Not even suburban Columbus. They were from the city of Columbus.
So I don't understand the motivation for blaming the bad stuff on outside agitators.
You don't want that on your city. You don't want you don't want to say your residents are causing the trouble.
Why can't you just say we've got some bad apples in the city? We have a city of
I know,
2 million
I,
people.
A
couple of Meridians.
Believe me, honesty is the best policy. But Andrew Ginther, the mayor of Columbus, not to make this too Columbus focused, but he did say that they had intelligence reports that he refused to outline, maybe for legitimate purposes. I don't know. But when we were talking to him, he did mention intelligence reports from both the state and police. So maybe there is something to that.
We'll see.
Certainly arrest records do not show that.
Donald Trump, he has been at the center of this, as he often is, and he wants a get-tough approach to these protesters. He says he respects civil disobedience, but he wants a get-tough approach. And the first time we heard about this was in a call he had with governors. Here's a portion of that call.
You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks. You have to dominate. You have to arrest people, and you have to try people. And they have to go to jail for long periods of time. I saw what happened in Philadelphia. I saw what happened in
It went on for quite
Donald
a while.
Donald Trump joining us from a walkie-talkie.
Yes, well,
thanks, President.
Well, it was a conference call. My guess is one of the governors on that call, a Democrat most likely, and one of their staff members recorded it and sent it to the New York Times and CNN and other organizations. Now, of course, we know that Governor DeWine is, shall we say, reluctant to criticize even the most outrageous of the president's comments. He often deflects reporters' questions by saying, well, you know, I haven't heard the comments, so I can't comment on them. Well, not this time, because the president made the comments to him and other governors.
No deniability there.
And that prompted an interesting exchange at one of the governor's briefings where APs, the Associated Press's Andrew Welsh Huggins, asked the governor about it.
When the president threatened to use active duty military to take over protest security in the states, he did so in a call to governors in which he said that you all are, quote, weak, quote, you're making yourselves look like fools, and you, quote, need to dominate. My question is, were you on that call? And either way, do you agree with the president's assessment that as far as Ohio is concerned, you're weak, you look like a fool, and you need to dominate protesters when it comes to cities' reactions to the protests we've been seeing?
Leading question, I think. I was on the call. The president did not mention Ohio, and I did not call in with questions. So I think that we have handled this well, not perfectly, because nothing's perfect.
So there's Governor DeWine, a longtime listener and not a first-time
caller.
When
you start making those mouth noises, you know you're in for an interesting answer.
Well, and again, he did not criticize the president for his rhetoric or threats to send in the army.
He did go on to say that him and Rob Portman did go on to say that we don't need the army here in Ohio patrolling our streets, that it's best for local leaders to decide how to handle such things. And
he
as
did
we said,
send 100 National Guard troops to Washington, D.C., though.
The Department of Defense asked him to do that, right? So he did. He did respond by doing that. He also activated the National Guard here in Ohio.
Well, in Columbus, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, in Columbus, you're right. And
I don't blame him. You know,
he already had him supplying food to food banks. I mean, this would seem to be almost a more appropriate use of the National Guard.
I don't blame him for just staying away from Donald Trump, because that's a no-win situation.
Well, that's why it's fun for reporters to watch him squirm.
Yeah, but that one there was Andrew Welsh Huggins, who's a super reporter and a very mild-mannered guy, really. You know, it wasn't a leading question. It was a pointed question, and the governor just...
Yeah, it wasn't leading. I mean, I guess all questions are kind of leading, right? I mean, you're trying to get him to answer what you're asking. That's a very appropriate question, because he's... Again, this is a fun topic for us to cover, because DeWine is in this impossible position where he can't really denounce things that Trump says because he has to appease the Trump base, but also... He can't look like he's supporting these outrageous statements from Trump that are really indefensible at times. And it's fun to watch him squirm on TV.
Yeah. He doesn't endorse them, but he just basically sidesteps, which is – he's good at it.
He's
got lots of practice.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. In case you forgot, we are in a pandemic that continues to threaten our health and our economy.
The incident in Minneapolis and the demonstrations all over the country certainly have overshadowed coronavirus this week, but it is still with us. We are up over 2,200 deaths, I believe, in Ohio now.
Well over 30,000 infections.
It continues to grow, although it's a very slow growth, and there are signs now that the rate of positive results from tests is starting to decline. So that's a good sign. It's still early, but we are seeing good signs that perhaps the worst is over.
That was before all these people hit the streets in the last few days.
We're going to see a
spike. There was a person in Columbus who was confirmed to have COVID-19 who was at a Thursday demonstration.
And there was not a whole lot of social distancing happening at those protests. A lot of mask wearing, but not a whole lot of social distancing. Anyway, this week, not a whole lot new as far as how the state is handling coronavirus. We did learn that the governor wants to open schools.
We fully intend to have school in the fall. We have goals to have kids back in the classroom.
fully intend. That's pretty soft.
Well, it's not up to him. It's the school districts who decide. So he says the state's going to give him guidelines and some best practices, you know, how to perhaps alternate days, maybe have split shifts, some students
some
in
kids
the morning.
On the, some kids on the graveyard shift.
Some in the afternoon, yeah, and then keep 6 feet between desks. And it's going to be tough. I mean, we saw yesterday here in Columbus, Ohio State University announced they're bringing their students back. They're going to have protocols in place before they bring back in August. Ohio University in Athens is bringing its students back.
Mm-hmm.
Bowling Green bringing its students back.
They have to. I mean, they don't have a choice of this. But I mean, they have – it's kind of gross to say, but they can't shut down. They can't tell students, we're not going to open in the fall. I mean, what would that do to enrollment?
Yeah.
They'll plummet.
Yeah, I mean,
understandably.
In virtual learning, it works, but at some point, students have to get into labs. They have to get into discussion groups face-to-face. And they want to be in that college environment. Students do.
Yeah, here at Ohio State, they're still not sure how they're going to work out dorms and dining rooms. They're still crafting that. They do have plans to have in-person classes resume August 25th, run through November 25th. Then they'll do finals online or either mail-in. They call it a, quote, distance learning method. There's no perfect setup. I mean, people are going to, especially when little kids go to school. I have a six-year-old son. I can't get him to stop picking his nose for 5 minutes. Imagine when he's around 20 of his buddies and they all think it's hilarious. I mean, they're going to be slobbering all over each other. I mean, the kids are disgusting. The kids are going to spread this like wildfire.
Speaking of disgusting, the debate in the House is kind of devolved, I guess you could call it. You know, the House passed this bill that limits the authority of the Director of Public Health, Amy Acton. Basically, that she would have to get legislative approval to have any kind of lengthy stay-at-home order, a public health order. The Senate rejected it unanimously,
mm-hmm.
wanted changes, they say, but they said no. And then the House is accusing senators of having to need to grow a pair. Now, we're not talking a pair of, you know, tomato plants or rhododendrons or hydrangeas. We're talking about the other pair. Even Larry Householder jumped in and said that the Senate needs to grow a pair and have these restrictions on the Department of Public Health. Come on now.
This is, what a world. Donald Trump's America.
That would be the big story if it wasn't for everything.
Speaking
else.
Of disgusting and speaking of Donald Trump now, let's move on to our weekly segment. We do it every week because he does something shrewd every week, if not every day, so
it's our Snollygoster of the Week award.
It is.
It honors the most shrewd political move of the week. You're right, Steve. We could do it every week with Donald Trump, but it would get boring. But this week, he went above and beyond normal Snollygostering.
Protesters on the other side, hands up in the air, chanting, "Don't shoot."
Don't shoot!
But that's exactly what they did, shooting tear gas and rubber bullets. These horrifying sounds heard in the White House Rose Garden, where the president starts to speak.
I am your president of law and order and an ally of all peaceful protesters.
The real-time split screen tells a different story. Peaceful protesters.
He's the ally.
Except
he's an ally, ally to peaceful
for that peaceful protest.
Except for the ones getting canisters of tear gas shot at them.
That was just incredible. You break up a protest with tear gas.
A peaceful protest.
Yes. Nobody got hurt, thankfully, that we know of. And also, he could walk across the street and stand in front of a church and hold up a Bible. We don't know if it was his Bible. He says it was a Bible. I was watching that. It was one of the more awkward political moments I have ever seen. It just looked strange, if not disturbing, but certainly just strange. And it's backfired.
He worked pretty hard for that photo, and it did backfire. I mean,
even Republicans mildly criticized it.
That's where we're at right now. Even Republicans mildly criticize Donald Trump.
Yes, well, maybe also that's deserving of our Snollygoster
sure
of the Week
is.
Award.
What if that's not what is?
What are we going to talk about next week, Steve? What is going
something.
To happen between
be
now and next?
There might be another monkey
Thursday.
Escape with COVID-19 samples.
Oh
there might be
God.
More, I don't know, murder hornets, murder mortar cicadas. I don't know.
It's hard to keep up.
Anyway, whatever happens next week, we'll be sure to bring it to you. Until then, be sure to tell your friends about us as well. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.